This episode of the Missed Spots podcast is brought to you by Amazon Prime, the amazing service from Amazon that allows you to get free two-day shipping on nearly every item available on their website, plus access to Amazon Prime Music and Prime Video service with tons of movies and TV shows, including the acclaimed original series Transparent, starring Jeffrey Tambor. Now you can get a free three-month trial of Amazon Prime by going to missbots.com/prime. Plus, if you do that, Amazon's going to throw in a free three-month trial of HBO on your Prime Video. Nothing else you have to say or do. You get that for free with this trial as well. That way you can catch up on Game of Thrones, Westworld, or you can watch anything from HBO's amazing back catalog, like The Sopranos, The Wire. It's all there for you. After your trial, you can pay just $99 for the entire year of Prime. Trust me, that sounds like a lot, but as a Prime member myself, that money more than pays for itself in just two-day shipping after just a couple of months. So head over to missbots.com/prime. right now and try Amazon Prime for free for 3 months and join what practically everyone should be a part of, Amazon Prime.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's a free event.
It's time to play the game. Time to play the game.
Welcome back to the Missed Spots podcast on MissedSpots.com, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, and Geek Life Radio. My name is Mike, and with me, as always, is the Kevin to my Mike. Here's Kevin.
Which one am I again?
Kevin?
Okay, good. Yeah, that makes a lot more sense. If I would have been Mike, it would have really confused me.
It would have confused me, too. I mean, it did confuse me, because this take was the second take that I had to take of that take.
Yeah, that was pretty adorable. We should have some one day put together a blooper reel of all the stupid things we say that don't end up making the air.
I have saved some of them in the past, but I recently had to wipe my old computer, so I don't think I have some of the good ones. But
trouble with the government?
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense.
I mean, no.
Say no more.
Well, we are inching closer and closer to Money in the Bank. We were just talking about before we went on air how it's pretty much like 6 weeks in between pay-per-views right now, with Backlash having happened in early May, and we don't have Money in the Bank until mid-June coming up.
How do you feel about that? Because we have been bitching for the last year and a half or so about so many pay-per-views. Is that room to breathe good for you, or is it?
Yeah, I think so.
I think the room to breathe is good, but I always worry about those last couple of weeks, because do they have enough material?
That is true. Yeah,
to get through to that. And so far, I think the build has been pretty good, and they haven't gone with a bunch of pointless tag team matches recently. Even though we've seen some of that, but
they still got 2 weeks to do that.
That's what my
two,
exact
three
point.
Weeks to do that, yeah. Yeah.
And you know you're going to get some of that. But yeah, we did have an episode of Raw, and it was an episode of Raw. It was, I don't know, Mike, what did you think about this episode compared to the week before? The week before, we had one of the worst segments of all time. This week, we had some bad segments, but what was your overall impression?
I mean, anything, I guess, would be a step up from there. I mean, I guess not anything. Challenge WWE. Could they make a shittier show? They'd be like, challenge accepted. But no, they definitely step things up a little bit. But there was some bad stuff, which I assume we're going to get into here in a little bit.
Well, I think that the show started off really, really strong, and that was with the crowd really, really behind a young gentleman by the name of Braun Strowman. Have you heard of this guy?
A thing or two.
Yeah, he's a new guy, big mountain of a man, and he is a babyface, and he is beloved by the fans. It's a really weird thing they're trying out now in WWE. I hope it catches on, and it is incredible to see someone who goes out there and gets the kind of reaction that you want him to get. Having setting up this match, which was the first thing done on the evening with Finn again after the week before, I thought was a mistake when I heard it, because I felt like no one can win in this situation. Finn's just going to get beaten again, and it doesn't do much for his character. I think I was pleasantly surprised. I think I was probably wrong in that. I think this match was pretty good. I really enjoyed KO taunting both of them on the microphone. Coming off of commentary, I thought it was, as always, KO, very creative, very funny. Finn hitting his finisher was a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you knew KO was going to get involved when you had him at commentary. So even though this was a little bit of repetitiveness from the week before, I think what saved it was KO on commentary and the fact the crowd was really into it. The crowd was responding to both Finn and Strowman, Strowman more than Finn, but when the crowd's into a match and excited about something, it's amazing how much better everything is.
Yeah, who would have thought that in order to have a good television show that is filmed in front of a live audience, that you make them happy and give them something that they can sink their teeth into and be emotionally involved in, and that it works.
Yeah, I did kind of like Finn stepping up and slapping Braun in the face. It shows that he's not afraid and that he's willing to go out there and, quite honestly, just get his ass kicked, but fight from underneath and just kind of play that resilient underdog role to someone like Strowman, who's an absolute beast. So overall, I thought that was a really effective segment. And the second segment worked pretty well for me, too. Elias was in rare form as a heel, and I think might have done his best heel, pure heel promo segment that he's ever done. What did you think about that? What do you think about my statement there?
He didn't play up his catchphrase as much to try to get the crowd to chant along with him. He pretty much cut down the crowd from the beginning. And
which he always does, but I thought it was effective and consistent, which was good.
Yeah. What I was saying is that he'll accept their accolades when thrown at him, and he'll search for those accolades from them for the most part by getting them to do the walk with Elias thing, and he didn't seem to really be going out there trying to get that this week, which I thought was a bit of a breath of fresh air.
Well, I hope this is a sign of things to come, because I'm kind of tired of guys that were supposed to boo having catchphrases that the people want to chant. And I know they want people to be popular, but I think it's counterproductive. Having the foreshadowing with Seth Rollins coming, and this, once again, probably the second most popular babyface on the Raw roster, a guy whose in-ring work is killing it right now, a guy who's doing good work with the IC belt. Seth Rollins is on fire, man, and he's not Braun Strowman level over, but he's up there, and the tease of him and Elias, which we ended up getting later on when Elias came back out to hit Seth with the guitar, I feel like this was well set up. I also feel like this could be a gangbusters feud.
Oh, yeah, and finally a proper feud for Elias.
I think so, and I think this is one of those, I think this will be one of those setups that Seth should win, hold the title, but Elias will be more over because of it. And I think this is one of those perfect instances where they can make that happen and make everybody look good while doing it. Before we had Elias attack Seth, we had a match between Seth and Jinder Mahal. I thought Jinder looked really good here. I think he's been very sporadic. He's had a couple good matches. He had a great match with Jeff Hardy some time ago, had a decent match with Chad Gable the first time they went out, but and then had some stinkers in between there. But I don't know if it's because he was working with Seth, but once again, Jinder playing his power game really well, pulling out some moves I haven't seen him do before. And you had, once again, babyface Seth Rollins getting cheered, Jinder Mahal heel being booed. It's just, this stuff shouldn't be that, should not be that complicated.
Jinder is a competent worker. I think that is pretty evident by this point in time. I mean, the guy spent a ton of time in the WWE previously before leaving and coming back. I mean, if the guy wasn't at least competent in his craft, he wouldn't be back here today and probably wouldn't have been given a title reign. I mean, it just shows that when he works with people who can put on a good match with practically anyone and can work with Jinder to the best of their abilities, that they can put together something. I mean, Jinder and Randy never meshed. Jinder and Nakamura never meshed. But I guess he's been able to find something to mesh with other people quite well. And I'm not that surprised by it.
Yeah, I thought this was pretty good. I loved seeing Seth kick out of the chair to the ribs. It made him look like a total badass and someone who is extremely resilient. I think they probably should not have had this end in DQ with Seth basically getting DQ'd on purpose, attacking Jinder with a chair in front of the ref. I think he probably should have beat him clean. I think that would have been the right move here, but it's kind of splitting hairs, especially since they're spinning him off, with Elias over here. So overall, I thought these two matches were good. These two first segments were good, and they were good because we had well-established dynamics of who these people were. We had solid in-ring work and solid character work all around.
Yeah,
and that's what good professional wrestling is built around. Absolutely. Not bad comedy, not atrocious segments like we've seen in the recent past. Speaking of atrocious segments, the next one was not good. Tell me what you thought before I kind of run this down with Nia Jax versus random enhancement talent.
So we got Nia being a heel with no turn, and the whole basis around it, I guess, was that there's no way that Ronda could get the armbar on Nia, despite that little over 2 months ago, Nia tapped to Asuka in an armbar on Raw.
Right. I mean, that's just stupid, and obviously they expect us to have short memories on this. I don't think any of this worked. Ronda coming out during Nia's entrance is dumb for a babyface to do, especially when you come out with a giant, stupid smile on your face and start high-fiving with the fans. If you're going to come out and try to play mind games and be kind of a badass, you know, be a little more cool about it. Don't come out like, hey, everybody, I'm here too. That was tone-deaf, in my opinion. I thought that the whole thing with Nia cutting a promo while in the ring with this person came off as forced and poor. I hate the fact that Nia's now turned heel. They built up Nia over the last, 3 months as a person who was bullied, and that a segment of the crowd could identify with and get behind in respect for her resilience standing up to a bully. And the first thing she does after getting this title is become a bully.
Yeah.
And not in a good storyline way of developing an ego and this, that, and the other. Nope. Overnight, snap your fingers. Because they decided to go with Ronda Rousey and they didn't want to go babyface versus babyface, they just decided to change alliances like they always do with the women's division. And it's just stupid. It just goes to show that the WWE just really doesn't care about any of this. The stories are not important to them. It's just the alignments can be as fluid as they want them to be, whatever suits their needs. They expect the fans to forget everything that happened before that moment, and I reject that. And it doesn't build for a good feud for me or interesting TV.
Yeah, as you should. This is extremely lazy booking. I mean, to say that we should just accept the fact that Naya's character has done a 180 off camera. No, we do not have to accept that. And we call you out on it. I mean, not that it matters, because who the fuck are we? But yeah, this is some poor, lazy booking at its finest. If you ever want to show a writer or anyone like story progression, this is exactly how not to do it.
And also, just for future notice, Ronda Rousey may put on the best goddamn armbar in the history of mankind, and because of that, it might just be much more fierce and much more deadly and hurt much more. I can buy that. But if you want to tell me that another professional wrestler can put someone in an armbar and they can laugh and completely no-sell it, then you're giving away the business, and it's stupid. So Nia Jax allowing herself to get in an armbar and then just staring Ronda Rousey down and laughing about it was just stupid. It's bad for the business. It's bad for the storyline. It's bad for that move. It's just, I mean, just think about if Ric Flair or someone goes and puts you in the figure four leg lock and you just kind of look at them. It's just so much of this professional wrestling is ridiculous. It requires such a buy-in from the people, and no selling a move like that is really, really, it's poorly done.
I have one other quick thing is, they seem to be, and it's a small thing, they seem to be constantly trying to figure out how they want Ronda's hair to look. Like and it's bugging the hell out of me.
That's what you're coming up with.
You will be, because I think what they're trying to do is find the sweet spot between having the braids in her hair, like something that she would do as a fighter for her fights, and having her hair down at the typical WWE thing to make a woman look like a woman by having her hair down. I don't think it's working. I don't like the partial braids and the partial hair swooped over to the other side. Pick one and just go with it.
Well, you know what, Mike? Actually, I was laughing because I thought it sounded kind of silly, but I could not agree with you more in the fact that Ronda Rousey is a professional fighter, or was a professional fighter, that went to the ring, dressed as a professional fighter with her hair in a position that a professional fighter would use. To have her come in and be a WWE competitor and not have that same look and feel is idiotic to me. And it just goes to show you how tone-deaf the WWE is when it comes to presenting their female talent. Ronda Rousey does not need to be a sex symbol. She can just be a badass fighter. And a badass fighter doesn't have her hair down during a match. And that's just dumb.
And I get that this was a non-wrestling capacity that she was in at this. So she doesn't need to have her hair braided at this point. She can have her hair down at this point and then braided in the match. I hate what they're doing right now. You know what's coming. You know that's what they're doing overall.
Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt have been booked really poorly since winning the tag titles. They've basically done nothing of note. We are going to get a battle royal to decide who's going to be their number one contender. That's finally getting a little bit of progression. But having them go out there and beat the Ascension and do what is basically a poor version of both their gimmicks is not working for me.
Also, I feel like they changed up their finisher over the past couple weeks. That wasn't it at one point a combination of the Sister Abigail and the Side Effect, and now it's pretty much just a double reverse Russian leg sweep.
Yeah, no, it's been the last couple weeks they've been doing that.
It looks so bad.
Yeah, I just feel like they are trying to have the best of both worlds. They do not want to change Bray's character because they're like, everyone loves Bray. No, be willing to change him up, give him something more, a different look, a different feel. Let him be in this woken universe with Matt. And then when you go back and you hit his music again in a year or so, it'll be a great nostalgia pop and you can reintroduce that character. I don't understand. It's just once they get anything that a character gets any kind of reaction for, they're terrified to go away from it. And you can't be. You have to let the character evolve. And that's one of the reasons why heels have catchphrases that you can chant along to. Because once they start to get popular, they're terrified to lose that. And they forget the fact of, as you always point out, nostalgia means everything to fans. So taking something away, a la the Shield music and Roman's Shield ring gear, is not a bad idea. Changing up Bray's character right now, not a bad idea either. In the tag team division, we do have a story that ran through this with the B team, Bo and Curtis Axel. I thought two good segments and one really, really bad one. And the really, really bad one was in the ring.
Yeah.
And was a barbecue, stupid, traditional Memorial Day food fight.
Any type of holiday segment.
Yeah. And the thing is I just have to wonder, who thinks this is a good idea? These have never been good. It's not even like
this has to be Vince's fingerprints all over it, because it's been going on for so long. Like, he's the one pretty much person that seems to be the constant there.
I mean, I can't understand how someone would write this and say this was a good idea. But the segments with Kurt in the back, those are actually entertaining. You're actually taking people that are interesting and entertaining, that seem to have a natural charisma, and you're writing them garbage to do. And yeah. I feel like it is completely counterproductive, because their banter with Kurt in that first segment, I thought was like, oh, that's a perfect thing for them.
Yeah.
And it doesn't overexpose them, and it keeps them, us wanting more of them.
I love the, of course, the Axel just speaking his mind and like almost as if Kurt's not there in his mind.
And also worked.
We need to get the approval of all the other tag teams. They're like, that's kind of funny. And
yeah, it worked for me. And those are the kind of things that work. And if you don't overexpose them, think Brizongo with the fashion files. They did so many of them, and they're nothing now. And they could have been something. They get an idea and they overexpose the shit out of it instead of letting us, you know, get dribs and drabs and really want more. Bobby Roode and Kevin Owens, okay. I will not describe how I feel about Bobby Roode, because I do it on every single podcast, but this was just a match, and Strowman attacking both men at the end. I understand why Strowman's attacking Bobby Roode. It's every man for himself in the Money in the Bank ladder match, yada, yada, yada. This ain't the Money in the Bank ladder match. It wasn't on Monday night. So having your big bad babyface, I know he's a badass, but having him attack Bobby Roode seems stupid to me. And having Bobby Roode jump around and as a cheerleader just made him look dumb and less cool for it. So overall, that segment didn't do much for me.
I was okay with him attacking Bobby Roode, because that's Braun. Braun is like kind of Stone Cold-ish right now. It doesn't matter if he's a face or if someone's a face or a heel. I disagree.
Two weeks ago, he fought Finn Balor and picked him up afterwards and slapped him on the chest and said, good job.
You know what? You're kind of right about that.
And we have seen him have tag teams recently. Like, he's been less of that person. If you were talking about 3 months ago, before they tried to make him Brain Strowman and make him a comedy act, I would agree with you. But the consistency, I like consistency.
Yeah.
And I like a trajectory for a character to follow, and this seems to go against that. We can actually talk about, I think, the Sami Zayn and Bobby Lashley segment here.
Yeah, the first time that they've interacted in 2 weeks.
Yeah, we were not allowed to. We did not allow ourselves to talk about the last week one.
And nothing happened last week.
I know.
I don't know what they were talking about.
Yeah,
with Bobby's sisters. I never saw anything like that.
Yeah, I never heard of anything like that. This was not good.
No, it wasn't.
I don't know where else to go with that. I'm not particularly interested in this feud, and I think it was, as often is almost always the case, poorly written, robotically acted, and not at all interesting. Does that cover it?
But Bobby is just atrocious on the microphone. It's cringy to listen to him talk.
Playing this kind of aw shucks, you know, everyday good guy. From what I'm told, it was really his heel character in TNA that finally got him over and got him to the point where people were really digging his character. And would it kill you to introduce a guy as a heel? And that's where his sweet spot is and let him get over naturally that way? I don't know. Maybe they just, you know, they got Drew McIntyre. They got other heels that they reintroduced. But to me, this just is not working. And I'm missing Sammy and Kevin because they were entertaining together.
Yeah.
Speaking of Drew McIntyre, we had him making short work of Chad Gable after Gable fought Dolph Ziggler the week before. A lot of rumors that it's going to be Jason Jordan coming out and helping out his former tag team mate and Chad Gable and reforming American Alpha. What are your thoughts on that? Apparently Jordan is ready to go and he's healthy and ready to work.
If it leads to something good for the two of them, then I'm all for it. I was really surprised at how quick of work they made this match, but you know, I mean, Jordan was getting kind of into his groove of being a smarmy heel before the injury, so it almost feels like counterproductive to then have him come back as a face when he was finally seeming to hit a stride there. And are they just kind of dropping they're not going to drop the angle thing, I'm sure, but it'll just be missing pieces of what the Jordan storyline was.
Yeah, and they are known to do this in a situation. They were setting up Seth and Jason Jordan as a feud. We could have had no interaction with Elias, and Jordan could have walked right back into a feud with Seth Rollins. I think that would have been a good move, too.
Yeah.
Gable has been buddy-buddy with Kurt Angle recently, and Jason Jordan is Kurt Angle's son in storyline, so I think there's a lot of ways they could do this. But I just don't see them doing this because no one is behind tag team wrestling back there. And what is American Alpha really going to do? I mean, we had the Authors of Pain appear after WrestleMania, and they've been missing in action for weeks now. I mean, what are we doing with these people? Sanity was supposed to show up on SmackDown 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Corey Graves said they're showing up next week. They never showed up. They do not have a commitment to tag team wrestling, so to me, that would be a major setback for Jason Jordan and Chad Gable, quite honestly, to reform American Alpha in that environment. I wasn't surprised that Drew McIntyre went over so definitively over Gable. Gable, I think having a technical match with Ziggler makes sense, but McIntyre is just too big, too strong, too fast. And McIntyre is he's a main event guy waiting to happen whenever they want to pull that trigger. The guy's a beast, and I love seeing him work.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So the main event of the evening was a gauntlet match. And we've seen one particular one involving Seth Rollins a few weeks back, or a few months back, I guess it would be now, that was just gangbusters, really, really great match. This was not that. And this was one of those matches where they love to say, the gauntlet match, the most exciting match, and blah, 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 blah. The first three falls were almost immediate. There was nothing exciting about any of this. These were instant pin from Bayley to Liv Morgan with a Bayley to belly, a roll up for the next one, and then Ruby Riott dispatching Bayley quickly. If you're going to do a gauntlet match and you're basically going to eliminate the first three people immediately, why are you even doing a gauntlet match? Or do a gauntlet match with four people? It's just the flow to the match doesn't really work. You never get any time to breathe. It was really only the last two, Ruby and versus Mickey, and then Ruby versus Sasha, that had any room whatsoever to tell any kind of story. Sasha Banks ends up winning the thing. She's ice cold when it comes to not ice cold. The fans still give a decent reaction to her, but she is a damn sight farther down the line than she was, you know, a year ago or so. and I think begging for a heel turn. It was supposed to be a big conquering moment for Sasha, and it just looked like a pretty pedestrian way to end an episode of Raw.
Yeah, and you know, I thought that the star coming out of this was kind of Ruby Riott, because I thought that she looked good against Mickie James. She looked good against Sasha. She's had some really fine matches in the past number of months. She's been doing decently on the microphone. She's just been anchored down by a couple people who we know nothing about storyline wise. I feel like they need to just drop her away from the rest of that group, and she should have gotten the spot in that ladder match.
I think she's the most interesting one out of them, out of the options that we had in front of us. I still, honestly, that's not true. I still think Bayley is the most interesting one if they ever want to give her a shot and actually book her character correctly. She is, she's much worse off than Sasha Banks right now. She had a stupid and pointless promo done before the match that made her look worse than if she had not talked at all.
Mm-hmm.
And they just continually do this. I still am dumbfounded at how royally fucked they made Bayley's character and how easy it was to book her and make her a absolute beloved star and book her into a position where she did not need a title. If they would have just followed the five easy steps. But now she's basically an afterthought, and it's not even charming to half the people anymore. So just damn shame about that.
Yeah. So that's it for Raw, right?
That was it for Raw.
Yeah. So SmackDown kicks off and with a Joe promo. That leads to a confrontation between Brian and Joe, leading into what we believed was going to be the main event for the evening for the final spot in the Money in the Bank ladder match. But Big Cass comes out on a crutch to interrupt things and says that actually he's going to get a match against Joe for the final spot. And that's when he's cleared, which is now. And he then attacks, pretty much ends up laying out both Joe and Brian there in the opening segment. And I think everyone and their mom knew that this was going to then lead to a triple threat match. And Paige certainly confirmed that shortly thereafter.
Yeah, you know, there's been so many rumors that I had read that Cass had torn his ACL again, and yeah, he was going to be out, and he's got all this heat backstage, and I just felt like, oh, you know, Cass is done, and it was to the point where it felt like they were backstage working the locker room as well, and I was somewhat surprised to hear Cass's music, and kind of pleasantly surprised at the way they pulled this angle off, because I wasn't expecting it. So I thought that was good. I kind of enjoyed it. And you know what? I enjoyed Cass as part of his promo. I think a lot of people think the guy is just an albatross out there hanging around everyone's neck. But when his promos aren't too long, I think he's got a little bit of ability on the stick. And while he's no Daniel Bryan in the ring, he can be carried to a decent match. So I kind of enjoyed everything going on with that.
Yeah. What I had read over the weekend is that Cass was still on the road with SmackDown for the house shows, which typically a guy who is truly like legit injured or long-term injured is not going to be doing. So it I guess maybe they played the dirt sheets a bit and built up a injury as being worse than what it actually was. Maybe he just tweaked his knee and needed a couple weeks off, and that was all. But then we had Nakamura against Ty Dillinger in a match that pretty much saw Nakamura building up this last man standing match, continually counting every time that he knocked Ty down, and Ty getting up before the 10 count. And eventually he got a little bit of a comeback, but Nakamura ends up winning with the Kinshasa, then hits Ty with a Kinshasa to the back of the head afterwards, and then does the whole 10 count thing.
Yeah, Nakamura does not sound menacing when he counts to 10. I don't know how many people could. Ty Dillinger has been entertaining saying the word 10, but not in the same manner. Listen, I was pleasantly surprised that Ty Dillinger was involved in this match. He's one of those guys who are like, oh, he's still on the roster? Cool, let's see a Ty Dillinger match. I also thought that he was represented pretty well here. He did get some offense. He looked very resilient as Nakamura was dominating him near the end of the match. And he kind of, you know, did the come on and basically said, you're going to have to put me down. And yeah. I thought that was good. It's something I was not expecting. I thought that was going to be a relatively quick squash match, and I was pleasantly surprised by it. I do still think that when Ty Dillinger is getting beaten down, he shows great babyface fire and shows why he could be a piece of the puzzle. You know, a guy that they use for more than nothing, which is how they use him. But overall, between Nakamura's stuff and AJ's interview afterwards, nothing really of any note. I just feel like, listen, I don't know how they could have booked this feud better other than maybe not as many matches and getting to the point quicker, but it is not working. I don't think the fans are getting the best of these two guys, Nakamura and AJ.
No, not at all. Not at all. Tell me what you thought about the dance contest between Lana and Naomi.
I thought, why are they doing this? What did we do to them? Why would they ever do this? When has anything like this ever worked? I mean, whether it's Triple H and Scott Steiner in a pose down or an arm wrestling competition, these are never good. They're never done well. The crowd never seems to care. I don't understand it, and it's not for me. My main takeaway from this is Lana and Rusev and Aiden English are frickin' baby faces. The crowd loves them. They have, and over the last 2 weeks, they've actually let them play into the crowd well, and they've come across as good guys. Why is the good guy attacking Naomi for no reason? Why? Why are you doing this in trying to position them as heels when the crowd wants to cheer them? Stop going against what the crowd wants to do, you fucking morons. That's what I thought about that, Mike.
That's pretty much what I thought, other than just like, I was just staring at me like, what's going on? I wrote, things happened, fighting happened. That's it.
It's dumbfounding to me.
After this, we had a 6-man tag match that was pretty good, in my opinion, between the New Day against The Bar and Miz. I thought there was some great action, some great drama in the match. Big E and Miz, I thought, were the MVPs of the match. But I thought this was a fantastic 6-man match.
Yeah, it was good, but if you look at it, it had every right to be. Look at the people involved. You had some great talent, and you had a reason for them to fight, even though it wasn't really for anything. And you have some continued issues with all these guys that's going to play into the ladder match and the Money in the Bank. So, yeah, overall, this was pretty damn good.
And then we had Mandy Rose taking on Asuka. And Sonya attacks Asuka on her way to the ring. And this led to Mandy being pretty competitive in this match. She had the upper hand for a while. She fought out of stuff from Asuka. Like, she was made to look very competent in this match, I felt, before ultimately falling victim to the Asuka lock, I think they made Mandy look pretty damn good in this.
Well, listen, when you look like Mandy Rose does, they're going to give her every opportunity to get over. And one thing that really annoyed me here was you had a crowd that was almost 50-50 chanting, "Let's go Asuka, let's go Mandy." Mandy Rose as a character has been pretty awful. And no character development. Her character is that she's very, very attractive. So basically the people were cheering for her because she's very, very attractive. Come on, you people. Really? If you want to look at pictures of Mandy Rose on your phone, please be my guest. But don't just cheer for her because she's good looking. She's a heel. She portrays as a heel. And more importantly, she's not very good at what she does. And Asuka is absolutely incredible. Sure, she's been booked really, really poorly since WrestleMania. But she's still freaking Asuka. And she's still a compelling, excellent in-ring competitor. So anyone chanting for Mandy Rose over Asuka can go wherever. Yeah, just the worst.
They can go to Hell, Michigan?
Sure.
Then the main event was the triple threat match for the final spot in the Money in the Bank ladder match. We got Joe and Brian pretty much just taking Cass out of the match early on, working together, or just every opportunity that they had a breath in between fighting one another, they would jump on Cass. I kind of dug it.
Did you dig it because it's kind of shitting on Cass, or did you dig it because I guess I don't want to put words in your mouth. The reason why I like this is because Cass...
It makes sense from a storyline standpoint to take out the big guy.
But not only that, Joe is unfortunately one of those cool heels that people like to boo. Cass is not. So it makes sense for me for the cool heel indie star and the other babyface indie star to team up on the kind of the guy that everyone kind of hates. I feel like it's a good way to continue to get heat on him.
Yeah,
you know, he was like the real heel in this match.
Yes,
I thought it worked.
I everything that you said, I would agree is why I liked it. There was a lot of reasons why, and I think you pretty much hit them all. But Cass made a comeback towards the end, but Joe won the match, making Brian pass out in the Kokita clutch and claiming that last spot. Big Cass still attacks Brian afterwards, so they're going to keep on going on with Brian and Cass there. But I think that is probably the right choice for the winner with Joe. He's the one, I guess, with the most upside that WWE's willing to give right now, because I guess Cass still has heat, and we've talked about before that they'll probably never completely trust Brian in a main event scene like that ever again.
Yeah, you know, I have mixed emotions on this because first and foremost, none of these three guys were going to win the contract. There's eight guys in this frickin' match, and you've got Braun Strowman as one of them. You've got The Miz as another one of them. The rumors that Big E is going to get pushed to the moon at some point. So I don't think that any one of these guys were... None of them would have been my pick had any one of them been in this match. And I think that's one of the problems of having so many people in these ladder matches is that it really dilutes, realistically, who you think is going to take home the prize. When you got five guys, six guys, I think it's probably a little bit better situation. But... Joe, I thought, was a good thing. It was a good he picked up the win here, but I got to feel bad for Daniel Bryan because there is this little bit of feeling after losing to Rusev some weeks ago, losing here. I don't want to see a Daniel Bryan can't get it done storyline right now.
Yeah, I just can't win the big one, kind of like a Dolph Ziggler type of thing.
I just think he has so much momentum coming back, and the people are so behind him. I'm not saying he should win the Money in the Bank contract. I'm not saying he should be in the world title picture right now, but I do think that he should be in a position where he's on a roll and really get in and continuing to get that crowd reaction as hot as it possibly can be, and make that crowd demand him in that position. Even if they don't pull the trigger, instead of they didn't have to give him another shot at the Money in the Bank. If they weren't going to put him in there, Why give him the shot again?
Yeah.
That's what I don't understand. They could have booked Cass and Daniel Bryan 100 different ways without having Samoa Joe involved.
Yeah, but then they would say, oh, how did we get Samoa Joe involved in that? Well, you just have another elimination match, another match for that spot. But yeah, it's WWE. They got to make things convoluted. So that does it for SmackDown. That does it for TV for the week, pretty much. Also, I guess Cedric Alexander retained the Cruiserweight title against Buddy Murphy on 205 Live.
You know, every time I see promos for 205 Live and I hear, you know, that Buddy Murphy's doing some great work and all this stuff, I feel bad that I don't watch. And as I've probably stated here on the podcast enough times, I don't have the ability to. It's not like I just never get to it. It's that I literally don't have the time. But I still wish I could watch good professional wrestling because I'm told that that's what this is. But I feel bad for these guys if they're doing the best work of their career and no one's really getting a chance to see it because I don't think I'm the only one that's not watching.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember a part of the whole brand extensions was that 205 Live was going to be, the Cruiserweights were going to be exclusively a part of Raw, and I haven't seen anything about any of them on Raw since WrestleMania.
Oh yeah, I mean, though that was one of the big things with the brand extension that the Cruiserweights were a part. But I believe with the amount of bodies that we talk about this all the time, the amount of people they have on the Raw roster, you can't realistically use any of those people.
Yeah.
It's almost probably better for them instead of being used in pointless six-man tag matches that don't do anything. They're trying to build a fan base to watch this in an episodic way with good television and good writing, and hopefully it can get built up and they can get the respect they deserve for the work they're doing in the ring. I mean, one thing we did not mention, Roman Reigns was not on Raw.
Yeah, he was not.
And it wasn't like it. Roman Reigns was not on Raw. They had a 7-person elimination match at the end of the show, and there were still tons of people that weren't used. and
Jeff Hardy wasn't on SmackDown this week.
Yeah, and I have to reiterate, I don't think everybody needs to be used every week. I think it's good that Roman Reigns was not on Raw. That's perfectly fine. You don't have to use everybody every single week. But when you have whole divisions, like the tag team division, on really both shows that are rarely featured in any kind of meaningful way, when all your women's matches are usually multiple-person matches, when you have people like Authors of Pain and Sanity that were supposed to be debuting on the main roster just having nothing for them. I mean, think about that. They brought Authors of Pain up post-WrestleMania,
mm-hmm.
and they had zero for them to do. Now, we've seen before people like Neville, we've seen so many people brought up to the main roster, and it was obvious they had no long-term plans for them because they were never booked well, but usually they had the first feud. Usually they had the first 4 weeks of television mapped out. This was nothing for them. And I can understand them wanting to give them a chance, and they've been in developmental for a long time, and they have a lot of bodies in NXT, and those guys want to be on the main roster. But why call up people when you have nothing for them to do? It's mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, I don't know if it is something that, like, maybe the talent are like, hey, when am I going to get called up? We've been doing this down here for so long. Or maybe they got promised, like, hey, you're going to come up at this point a year in advance. And like, okay, here's my time. And they're like, well, okay, well, you're called up. We don't really know what to do with you. I mean, because I have a hard time believing that NXT is like, we got nothing else for them, so they need to go up to you. Like, they'd still use those guys if they were told that they could still use them. I know that.
Well, I mean, listen, you've got a lot of factors, I'm sure, and things that we have no understanding of, obviously. This is not our business, and we don't understand the inner workings of that, and we don't understand the inner workings of pay and what these guys, as you said, have been promised and what these guys actually want to do, by the way. Authors of Pain might be very happy if they're getting much bigger paychecks than what they were doing at NXT. So, you know, to each their own in that way, but your roster is there. They are your resources, right? If in our business we had no plans for major resources of ours, we'd be fired from our jobs, right? Yeah. That's just the way it works. Like, you need to know if you've got pieces in place, you have to know what you're going to do with them. And to have tons of talent being either never used or used so sporadically that they're no longer have any weight or interest from the fans, there's something wrong with that.
Yeah.
It would almost be better if we had a bunch of, like midway enhancement talents, you know, Barry Horowitz kind of guys that didn't have really any personality on the roster than having guys like Heath Slater and Rhino, because they're serving the same purpose, but they're in that middle ground where we're supposed to care about them when they put them out there. And then when we don't, it's like, oh, well, that's why we don't use them. You have to give somebody a chance to succeed, and they don't have the ability to.
Yeah. Well, is there anything else that we need to really hit on?
I don't think so. No, I as we talked about in the show open, I feel like we have a pay-per-view to discuss, which we do not, and we actually don't even have one next week. Yeah. So, yeah.
Makes these episodes go by a little quicker.
Easily breezily, my friend.
Yeah. All right. So thanks, everyone, once again for joining us on the podcast. Make sure that you follow us on social media. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/MissSpots. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at MissSpots. We're always live tweeting along to Raw, SmackDown, and the pay-per-views. You can listen to this podcast in one of many different wonderful fashions, whichever fits your needs best, such as our website, MissSpotsPodcast.com, or simply MissSpots.com. Or you can subscribe to us on any of the major podcast services, such as iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, Google Play Music, Overcast, Podcast Addict. We are on there, so you can subscribe and get brand new episodes delivered to the device of your choice every Thursday, so that you can listen to this show. You can also listen to us every Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on Geek Life Radio at geekliferadio.com. For Kevin, my name's Mike. We'll catch you next week. Good night. Good wrestling.